All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday, June 9th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everyone. We made it. It is a beautiful 67 degrees and partly sunny here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Emotion Detectors, Matrix Simulations, Self-Learning AI, and Assimilation. We talked about all those things. We found out that there are all kinds of companies that are finding ways to turn AI toward watching our expressions, our bodily movements, our vocal inflections, and by comparing those against the big database, big data is everywhere. The more you feed the machine, the more chinks in the armor you're giving them to be able to compare and contrast with the million other people who've become a part of this unwilling experiment. To be able to determine whether or not you're operating within parameters, and if you are not, as to what part of the spectrum you are leaning toward. They eventually will be able to make simulations based upon not only your behavioral patterns, because they will profile you from birth. They'll probably also have some sort of biosensor technology inside of you from a lot of different perspectives. We've seen, I mean, back in the very beginning, remember it was just like iris scans or fingerprint scans. We were like, whoa, biometrics. And now it's got to be, oh, DNA, $99, spit in a tube, send it to Ancestor DNA. See if you're related to the queen. But what you didn't know is that Ancestry.com now owns rights to utilize your DNA in any way that they see fit. And DNA is probably one of the ultimate biometric markers. We've discussed that woman. I think she was in New York City. She was collecting discarded items around New York City, cigarette butts, chewing gum, and she sequenced them and created a likeness of what the person who discarded that item had a good statistical probability of looking like. Eye color, hair color, facial shape, nationality. She could determine all that stuff just from the spit that was left on the cigarette butt or in the gum. And then she had these 3D masks printed out of these strangers that threw garbage on the street. And it's a horrifying thought. So the fact that you are giving exclusive rights, I don't know exclusive, because they said that you can also market your own DNA. But I mean, you're giving them rights to do whatever they want with your genetic material. And remember, as things are moving forward, this technological takeover, we heard Regina Duggan a long time ago, and I can't play clips anymore because Skype messed that all up, but with some of the forest upgrades. But we listened to it. I linked to it in the notes. I'll link again. So if you haven't seen it, you can. But Regina Duggan, she was working at the Motorola division within Google. She had come from DARPA, and she took over this ATAP program, which is some sort of advanced technology mobile division. And they were working on all kinds of secretive stuff. But one of the things that she had spoken about was turning yourself into an authentication token. And they did that. I don't know. She swallowed some little pill that lasted for 24 or 48 hours and gave you authentication superpowers, as she called them. And see, she was also the one that was part of that Project Jacquard, also at Google, that moved forward the technology of wearable computing. They had a Project Jacquard was in collaboration with Levi's. They created a wearable, of course it would be wearable, jean jacket, but it was created using special threads that were somewhat flexible, and they were wireless antennas. So it turns your jacket into a hot spot, technically. And you could just then swipe up your arm or down your arm to do the motions on the tablet. And I don't know how you would even see that, maybe in a Google Glass-esque type thing. I don't know. I don't know what their plan was. Maybe it was just being beamed into the air. They do have those virtual keyboards that you can just type anywhere, and it's just light. I don't know. But she really spearheaded that. And then she left Google after she brought some of her other tentacle-loving friends from DARPA into Google, DARPA Dan being one of them. And there were a couple DARPA scientists now over there. And she moved along to Facebook, to their mysterious Building 8. We found out recently that Zuckerberg just came out and rolled out this new technology that's going to allow Facebook to utilize your brainwaves to type and interact with your Facebook friends. Well, you know, we found out some of these tech companies, there were a few now, have really been jumping into this emotional thing. We found out, you know, Homeland Security, as part of some of their TSA airport spotting procedures, they are now recommending that maybe AI start doing the looking for the twitchy guilt behaviors that they have identified in the human condition. We already found out micro-expressions, and this is the same sort of technology that they're talking about using in airports. Micro-expressions are something that we all have, though we might not realize it. And there are certain individuals in law enforcement and psychological professions that are already trained in spotting these. But if you haven't been trained, you typically won't notice them. But they are what, in poker, you would call a tell. To be a good poker player or a good liar, apparently, you have to be able to control those tells. And they now have AI that is very good at doing that using a machine vision algorithm. They've taught it to learn to recognize hidden facial expressions and potentially in the future lies. But we also found out that the University of Oxford, I believe, they are also using facial recognition on sheep, and they are hoping at some point in the future on humans to be able to recognize emotions. And the one that they were experimenting on the sheep with was pain, which was really shocking to me. I'd like to know a little bit more about that experiment and what the circumstances were. Were they just doing facial recognition on sheep that were giving birth, or were they actually electrocuting the sheep or something of that nature to see what the facial expressions might be? But guys, they really have been rolling out this technology for a while, and so we don't realize it, but everywhere we go, there's probably a camera on us somewhere. At least most of the places in populated areas, for certain. Even when you drive down the street, they have cameras on the traffic lights, probably on some of the street lights as well. You go into a bank or a grocery store, I mean, it's not really hard to track you down. If they really wanted to backtrack where you were and what you did, you know, then you get your cell phone, boop, 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 boop. That's that data. I don't remember what they used to call it. When they metadata, when they first were getting into like the loss of privacy, you know, go back a decade ago, even when that first started, but even like 5-6 years ago, there was an outcry about some of the bag tagging and tracking that was happening with cell phones. And the NSA came out and said, nah, don't worry about it. You know, these things don't really look at your private texts or email messages. What they're doing is just looking at your metadata. They made it sound like it was this generic log material. But then a third-party company came out. We actually covered this story, and I don't know if I'll be able to find this one because I have no idea what it was called. But it's pretty interesting because it was a bunch of computer scientists who actually sucked the metadata out of the cell phone and put it through this tool that they had built to see what kind of information they could garner about some unidentified person's day, and it was quite shocking. They could see exactly where you went, who you spoke to, how they were connected to you. And they could reconstruct a good portion of your day. Well, listen to this. So talking about big companies, Facebook. Again, remember, they have Regina Duggan over there now. Facebook now has a plan to, quote unquote, read emotions through your smartphone. Hey, didn't an Israeli company already come up with ways to do that? Well, listen to this. Facebook is famous for pushing technological boundaries with its innovations, but the latest inventions may well leave worried users hitting the dislike button. Out of RT News from June 8th, yesterday, 2017. A patent filed and approved by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office details how the emotions of a Facebook user could be predicted based on characteristics of a keyboard input. Put simply, the firm would read a person's emotions based on speed and pressure of how they tap the keys. This patent, entitled Augmenting Text Messages with Emotion Information, proposes that features be added to text to reflect the feelings of the sender. Oh, now I think there have already been other companies working on this technology. It's going to be interesting to see if they end up in a partnership with other individual organizations that we've read about, or if there's some sort of lawsuit. This is pretty interesting, guys. This reminds me of that Doctor Who episode that I mentioned a while back, where there was a little thing, a little LCD on their backs that appeared, and it gave a smiley face, an upside down face, a crinkled face with different pretty colors depending upon their emotions. This is pretty frightening. Perhaps the most alarming of Facebook's pending patents is, quote, techniques for emotion detection and content delivery. The application details Facebook's desire to watch its users through their smartphone cameras or webcams. What? The filing outlines the number of home and leisure items that now contain cameras and goes on that state that the current content delivery system typically does not utilize passive imaging information. Get a piece of electrical tape now and put it over all integrated cameras. That's insane. You know, they've been able to do that forever, those little permissions. Anytime you install something that says we have access to your camera, to your microphone, to your phone calls, to your text, to all of your stored images. See, that's another one of that read the fine print, because you've blatantly given them access to comb through anything and everything to garner that valuable consumer or future consumer information about you, for them to profile you and then target. And that isn't just from a consumer perspective, by the way. That is how they also surveil. And they will put you into a database. That database will give you a pretty color and a smiley face as to whether or not you should be trusted or if you should be on a watch list. This filing, so this is this emotion detector through your cell phone by Facebook. This filing outlines the number of home users and leisure items that now contain cameras, and it goes on to state that the current content delivery systems typically do not utilize passive imaging information. Thus, a need exists for a content delivery solution that takes advantage of available passive imaging data to provide content to a user with improved relevancy. The filing reads. And you know, this strikes me as very similar to the way Google worded their patent and being able to open the microphone to be able to use your background noise to advertise to you way back when. That was quite a while ago. The proposed system from Facebook would capture the target's image, identify the user's emotion, and then store the data. And then based on this, Facebook could determine which emotions a piece of content elicits and use the data to target its users. Another patent proposal based on facial recognition and published last month focuses on the generation of emojis based on the facial expressions of the user. Oh my God. For example, the user can take a selfie and the system would produce an emoji expressing the same emotion. Don't feed the machine, people. Other Facebook innovations. I mean, we've learned all about how kind of deep learning works and some of these technologies that DARPA and others are working on, this lifetime learning project where every bit of interaction with humans that they have, they use that as a learning experience for the machine. So as you're taking selfies and they're decoding what your emojis are, this is going to be to teach the machine, maybe not how to have emotions, but how to properly emulate emotions as someone who had a narcissistic or some sort of psychopathic or sociopathic disorder who doesn't feel empathy or emotions as we do, but successful ones learn to mimic those emotions to be able to interact and find a new target and manipulate their environment. So this is exactly what they're doing. They're going to allow these machines to virtualize emotions so we will be more apt to interact with them and forget that they are artificial, that they are collecting surveillance and information and statistics and behavioral biomarkers about you to be able to predict with more and better accuracy in the future, the more data that's fed into the machine, what your reactions will be to any given potential situation. This really is, what's that movie with Tom Cruise, Minority Report? This is where we're headed, guys. And I've been seeing recently a few individuals that surprised me posting things about wanting to be a transhumanist or embrace the ways of the transhumanists. And I don't think they realize what they are asking for. Like, they're thinking that they're going to be autonomous and libertarian and do their own thing, yet become a part of the machine. And when I see stuff like that, that means that they totally missed the mark. They have not been listening to this show, that's for certain. And they don't understand how embracing that machine means becoming a node on the network. And I know it may sound fantastical, but we've outlined there are a lot of things that they've been working on that will allow them to target at that level, at that DNA microbial level. They can program and they can surveil. Remember, we even have pretty colors in our stool to tell our doctors what is going on inside of us. That was one of the newest living therapeutics things that they were talking about. It's just disturbing. So now our cell phones, we used to joke about Dr. Smartphone and good old Tommy Insel, former director of the National Institute of Mental Health, going over to Google's Verily division. It's amazing that he hasn't come up in this, but I wonder if Google and Facebook are going to slap happy. Regina Duggan is going to come back to Tommy and say, hey, we'll let you license some of our data that we are garnering about millions of people around the globe. $29.95 there, Tommy. We'll give you access to our data. You guys don't even need to spend the money to develop it. It is not clear how this bot would be deployed by Facebook. However, the patent states that the device could include as a display screen, camera, speaker, and microphone. In 2014, Facebook filed a patent to get around users who choose not to share their relationship status on their profile. It proposed inferring someone's relationship status based upon their interactions with other users on the social networking site who have provided their personal information. The inferred relationship status could then be used by advertisers to target the users with posts, the patent states. For example, an advertisement for a dating service is associated with targeting criteria identifying users associated with a relationship status of single, and users associated with the inferred relationship status of single are identified as eligible to be presented with the advertisement. Facebook files dozens of patents on a weekly basis. CEO Mark Zuckerberg, first ever filed patent, initially rejected by the U.S. Patent Office for being quote-unquote obvious, was approved in 2012, 6 years after it was lodged. Interestingly, it referred to a term not mentioned in any of Facebook's most recent filings, and that would be privacy. Titled Dynamically Generating a Privacy Summary, the patent focused on protecting the way the user's information appears on a screen and how they would be able to view their privacy setting. So yes, interestingly enough. So just by interacting with Facebook, I will almost bet you that somewhere in there, there's a big black box. Just by being a participant with their software to provide your information to Facebook exclusively or non-exclusively, but without recourse to be able to then give for research and make money on you, because that's what it's all about. That's why the service is quote unquote free. Remember, there is no free lunch, Johnny. And everything free has a price. Always beware of the wolf in sheep's clothing. All right. Well, here is a story, May 5th, 2017. We've talked about this a number of times. Human-robot interactions take a step forward with new emotional chatbot. Remember, we've been talking about imbuing emotions by giving AI a couple different senses. Robot googly eyes or cameras are one. They can read your facial expressions and do that 230-point facial emotional recognition. They can also listen with robot ears or a microphone to your vocal intonations, and not only be able to determine your emotional state, but they can hear a progression in an emotional state, and they can also diagnose certain diseases, physical as well as mental, on a spectrum. It's frightening. It's frightening. You will not be able to run or hide from any of this technology. Researchers describe the emotional chatting machine as a first attempt at the problem of creating machines that can fully understand users' emotion. An emotional chatting machine has been developed by scientists, signaling the approach of an era in which human-robot interactions are seamless and go beyond the purely functional. The chatbot, developed by a Chinese team, is seen as a significant step towards the goal of developing emotionally sophisticated robots. The ECM, Emotion Chatting Machine, for short, was able to produce factually coherent answers whilst also imbuing, hey, they used my $10 million word, its conversation with emotions such as happiness, sadness, or disgust. See, they're going to start anthropomorphizing, so there's a better word, artificial intelligence, so you can't tell the difference between a human and a machine. We've talked about Turing tests before. We are about at that level from a bunch of different perspectives, not only bleeding what is human and what is artificial human intelligence and artificial intelligence in a competition, but also being able to see and distinguish between what is graphically real and what is graphically not real. We read about a company out of the UK yesterday that is literally trying to recreate the world. They are starting with cities and they are working their way out and they are making as much of an exact replica in digito. Can we call it that instead of in vitro? In digito? And then running as many simulations as they can. One of the things we found out is that in some of the self-learning technology now that is being spun out, not only from Google, but also from Elon Musk and now DARPA, is that what they are doing is they are taking two artificial intelligences, pitting them against each other, and having them compete in virtual reality as they are recreating the real world around them and then reacting and interacting as if it were real, and then learning from that experience. So when they put them in the real world, they only have to be shown once. It's horrifying, people. And now, you know, we have people such as Craig Venter and Georgie Porgy Church running around, splicing and dicing the human genome, putting it onto an assembly line, and creating synthetic organisms. Where do you think this is going to lead? We have this technology race that is happening in artificial intelligence, in biological technologies. And don't think that this is going to all be for the benefit of mankind. There is an out-and-out technological war that is going on right now. Something I wanted to mention, there were quite a few listeners over the last few years who have brought a series to my attention that I'm really, really super surprised that I never saw before. It is called Fringe, for anyone who is ever a fan. I don't know. I was a huge X-Files fan back in the day, so I don't know how I ever missed this, but I did. And there are like 7 seasons of it, which is even more unbelievable. But it's kind of like the X-Files meets DARPA meets MIT and Harvard meets bioterror meets everything this show talks about just played out on TV. And I got to tell you, first of all, if you've never seen it, it is very highly recommended. I have found it looks like almost all of the episodes out on DailyMotion.com. If you go to DailyMotion.com, it appears to be, I kind of looked to see who owned them. Looks like it is a French company. It's like the French YouTube. But they have all the full episodes out there. Just search Fringe, space, and then S as in season, the number 1, space, and then E as in episode 1, and hit enter. And it should start you at the very beginning. After each episode, scroll down. And right down below it, you'll see a little thumbnail of the next one in the series. Actually, it's pretty close. They're all in order. And you can just keep going. And I got to tell you, it's quite an addictive show. But I have to say that out of anything I've ever seen, that show is really, really on the money with some of the things that they are playing out there. They even have the scientist who ended up in a mental institution and then they broke him out because of all these weird things that were going on, all these weird bioterror attacks and cells melting and crazy stuff happening. And they got the scientist out. The reason why he ended up going to a mental institution is because his lab assistant died while working on one of these DARPA-funded experiments. And yes, I did say that. He had been a DARPA scientist working at Harvard. And they also have this whole connection to this big company, and it does happen to be taking place in Boston, Massachusetts as well, but they have this connection to this big military industrial complex company called Massive Dynamics. not Boston Dynamics. But speaking about Boston Dynamics, by the way, this is what made me think of this. We found out a while ago that Boston Dynamics had sold their robotics division to Google. And that was Big Dog, if you remember, that pack mule robot that they originally had intended for the troops, but it didn't have a good battery life and it made a lot of noise and it wasn't as stable as it should be. I believe they were also the same ones that developed Atlas. Atlas has changed hands a few times, and they gave some samples of that to some of the universities to tinker with after that Robot Grand Challenge. But Google last year had decided that they had to get rid of a division to free up capital for some of these other divisions. And so they took a look at all the divisions to see what was making progress and what wasn't, in quite a DARPA-esque fashion. And what wasn't making progress was this robotics division that they had purchased from Boston Dynamics. So they put it up for sale. We covered it last year, and there were a couple contenders. Amazon at first was rumored to be looking at some of these robots, utilize things such as Atlas in the product fulfillment warehousing. I was thinking Atlas would also be good on like a delivery truck or something like that. But Amazon didn't seem to be interested. Then in the end, talks fell through. But Toyota had seemed to be quite interested. And I really thought Toyota would have been a good fit because Gil Pratt, who had been the director of the DARPA Robotics Challenge, had taken over that brand new artificial intelligence, $1 billion invested by Toyota in an artificial intelligence research center in California. And they had been very interested. Well, it ends up not being sold to either of those companies. SoftBank. And I was trying to remember, somebody, Cupid Doll for you, if you remember what story we read yesterday where SoftBank came up. And I had made a comment that I hadn't heard of them in years. They had actually come up back in the 90s. We had some things going on with them and software agreements and that. I remember reading about them in the news. And that was the first time I had ever really heard of SoftBank. But SoftBank out of Japan, so another Japanese company, not Toyota, has purchased Google's Boston Dynamics division. Now, one thing that's really interesting about Japan, actually a few things, is that remember, a lot of these robots in the beginning, they said that they wanted to develop not only for the war machine, but oh, to go into Fukushima because no humans could go in there. And now they found out just about every robot they've ever sent in there ends up malfunctioning because the radiation levels are so high. So that's one thing kind of caught my attention about a Japanese company purchasing the robotic division. But also another thing, Japan, for the very first time since World War II, has fired up their armed services again. And this is what they're saying because of this whole Chinese, South China Sea dispute. And remember, Japan for a long time has kind of been our sidekick after we blew them up and made them a big petri dish experiment as to what happens to people after being exposed to large amounts of radiation. I really believe that's what it's all about. I really think that that's why Fukushima is just kind of percolating away. It's just a continuation, phase two of that experiment to see how we end up with mutations. Remember, it's all about mutation, people. That's where some of the most interesting new species come from. Whether it's natural mutation from our environment, man-made mutation from something such as CRISPR, or accelerated mutation from something such as radiation. Remember, radiation has always played a part in life on Earth because we are exposed to it on a daily basis from space and the sun and, you know, space waves, gamma rays, whatever, high-speed radioactive particles. But it's not necessarily enough to kill us, just mutate us enough that we might pass on that mutation to our offspring that then may become dangerous or potentially advantageous. And the way that they have shown evolution to work is if it ends up being an advantageous mutation, then it tends to stay. How unique is that? You know, guys, this is really horrifying because we are now working on these technologies. We've read about that Apollo Project of the Brain, IARPA and DARPA, and the government under this brain initiative, and a lot of global organizations are all working on being able to decode the brain. We found out a horrifying story the other day about how the scientists don't really know how artificial intelligence and making decisions and learning processes that are going on already in the big pulsating brain in the sky, in the cloud. They don't really understand how it works. So they're working now on a program. Seems that a grant was given by DARPA to Oregon State University's College of Engineering to figure out what AI is doing and to make AI explain how it came to a particular decision. The hopes would be that if they can get explanations, they would gain trust in how these systems work, which then would allow them, from a military perspective, to put them into devices that they would like to make autonomous, such as drones or satellites or weaponry of all kinds. It's a very, very, very horrifying thought. So as we are imbuing emotions and intelligence and decision-making processes and the ability to explain themselves, we are making these machines in our own image. But the question is, a machine can't feel emotions. Remember Star Trek and Data? Data and Lore? Was that his name? I think so. Lore, which was his twin, but Lore did not have the emotion chip. Lore could not experience life like Data could. I know, I hate talking about TV shows, but they are good illustrations as to things that we've been shown in our cultural narrative that they have been spinning for us. To use as an example. Anyway, so China, which is way ahead of us in AI, a Chinese team has developed a chatbot that is seen as a significant step toward the goal of developing emotionally sophisticated robots. So once we have robots that can learn and grow up and can explain themselves and become way smarter than humans and can read your emotions, how are we going to be able to deal with that? How are we going to be able to determine who is real and who is not? You know, as these things become closer to reality and things become higher resolution, and they get better and better at 3D printing biological organisms. Yeah, they can already do that. They can do organs, for God's sake. They can make these things bleed. They can make them sweat. How are we going to be able to determine what is real and what is not? You know, we found out that there are all kinds of projects going on right now on how to merge human brains and artificially intelligent brains for one reason or another. A lot of times it is to try to cure PTSD or traumatic brain injury. But Elon Musk has even warned that at some point we better be able to compete with the machine. If we can't beat them, maybe we should join them. Well, we covered a story right at the end of the show yesterday. ScienceAlert.com, May 29th, 2017. This dystopian device warns you when AI is trying to impersonate actual humans. Now, we read couple stories a while back. There was one about a product called Face to Face with the number in it. Plug that in. You'll find the demonstrations. They were really dystopian and really made you start to question anything that you are seeing on the mainstream. It allowed an individual to be sitting in a chair with a camera aimed at their face, and they could start saying things, talking. And this camera would take the 230-point facial recognition and all those points, those algorithms off the face and the musculature and the bone structure, and be able to take those movements and then skin them with somebody else's appearance. And that would be, you know, they went out to the internet and they found public images of public people. I think the one that we had looked at had been George Bush, maybe even Arnold Schwarzenegger. And they were able to make them appear in video as if they were actually saying what the person behind the camera was saying in real time. Then we also found out that there was another device out there, another piece of software, actually, that Adobe was working on that they were calling Photoshop for. I don't remember what the actual program name was, but they were going to be releasing it at one of their big software conferences, and it would allow them to take just 10 minutes, I believe, of somebody speaking and come up with all their inflection points and build an algorithm of their voice pattern to be able to decode, splice, and dice on the fly and make them say things that they actually never did. Now, with those two things put together, that should make you question anything that you see right now. And then remember, before that, we also discovered that during the Gulf War, there was a Washington Post story that had come out about this technology that they had already been using, impersonating generals' voices as a part of this new 21st century warfare that they were going to use against the insurgents in Iraq. They also had some of those microwave weapons, the sonic weapons, to make them think that it was the voice of Allah. They were calling it the voice of Allah weapon. And they could make people sound like they had said things when they actually never did. I mean, that was, I think we read that story was back in like 2002, 2001. It had come out. I mean, it's very frightening to think that they've been able to do that already for a lot of years. And then we watch some of these comedy shows that we like to call news and interviews and events that happen. It just makes you wonder what really could be fabricated and what is actually reality. And as time goes forward, they're going to get better and better at creating real life matrices in high definition and be able to duplicate everything around you. So there is this new dystopian device that warns you when AI is trying to actually impersonate humans. The wearable prototype is designed to identify synthetic speech and alert the user that the voice that they are listening to does not belong to a flesh and blood individual. It was developed as a proof of concept in just 5 days, and the prototype makes use of a neural network powered by Google's TensorFlow machine learning software. AI is evolving rapidly, and we are now facing a big issue about security and whether or not we are being hacked by potential rogue agent. You know, it's really frightening, guys. People are so naive, too. They're never even going to realize that it is happening. As AI and robotic technology evolve, we are facing an uncertain future where machines can seemingly do all sorts of things better than people can from mastering games such as AlphaGo with the Go game and the champion. And soon to be even white collar jobs and brain surgeon drilling holes in your skull. And while the gravest concerns envision a future dystopia where unregulated, super powerful AIs threaten humanity's very existence, the truth is that we are already entering a new, unsettling era in which machines can deceive humans by impersonating the ways that we speak and that we look. As this technology gets even more sophisticated, it is becoming easier to imagine a world where soon it may be difficult or even impossible to tell when a quote-unquote person that you are talking to on the phone or watching on TV is actually real or not. But while AI is what empowers this nightmare scenario, it could also be what helps us to reveal these synthetic imposters for what they are. The team at an Australian creative technology agency, and I wonder if this is the same Australian creative technology agency that was making that avatar baby, if you remember, the one that could actually see and interact with you while it was growing up inside of the computer, trained its AI on a database of synthetic voices, teaching the offline network to recognize artificial speech patterns. And when the wearable prototype operates, it captures audio spoken into the device's presence, and then it sends it to this neural network in the cloud. See, it's all in the cloud, people. It's the big pulsating brain in the sky. And if the AI, for $29.95 a month, if the AI detects an actual human voice, code green, you'll see a happy green smiley face, then all is fine. But if the system picks up a synthetic speech pattern, it has a unique way of subtly letting the human know that they are talking to a digital clone. Rather than using light, sound, or vibration to alert the user, the prototype includes a miniature thermoelectric cooling element to reinforce that the voice that they are hearing is coming from a, quote, cold, lifeless machine. We wanted this device to give the wearer a unique sensation that matched what they were experiencing when a synthetic voice is detected, says the team's research division. And by using a 4x4 millimeter thermoelectric Peltier plate, they were able to create a noticeable chill on the skin near the back of the neck without drawing too much current. Oh, yeah, I'm sure that that's probably healthy. That's right, guys. This device literally sends a chill down your spine while you are talking to a digital doppelganger made up of zeros and ones. And we can't think of a more fitting example of user interface feedback. Of course, because the anti-AI is just a work in progress, it is unlikely the device will actually be released anytime soon. But the researchers behind it say that they are still refining their prototype and intend to improve the neural net with more synthetic content in the future. Is this something that you and I might need? Well, it's possible. After all, in a post-truth world dominated by fake news and misinformation, ding-a-ling, where the world leaders can so easily be manipulated to say things they've never actually said, like I said, nothing is for certain anymore. And it isn't, guys. And listen to this one. This is out of futurism.com, April 29th, 2017. According to expert Ben Ross, human-level AI is something that we will be seeing in our lifetime. And we better be prepared for it, because whether it will be a force of good or destruction is actually in our hands. Yeah, well, I would say not really. Yeah, they are determining right now, as they are teaching autonomous weaponry at some point to explain itself. Guys, this is all bad. It's just all bad. All of it is bad. We are determining the future of the human race as we speak. And it is not in our hands. We are not getting a vote as to whether or not we think this is a good idea. So bad idea, 3,272 human level AI will be walking the streets by 2040. So what happens when computers achieve a human level of artificial intelligence? Ben Ross, MYOB's user experience and project management leader, believes that because of advances in hardware and software, it is not a matter of if, it is a matter of when. And as a tech enthusiast, Ross is passionate about the potential of automation and AI. He cites Moore's Law as a way to illustrate the advances in the field where computing power of machines is right now doubling every 12 months. And that is a fact that has held true over the last 50 years. With that said, if we average expert predictions, we will reach human-level AI by 2040. And you know what, guys? I'm going to tell you that it might even be sooner than that, because 2040 is quite a long way away, and we are seeing every other week just about some new technological innovation, like, oh, I don't know, teaching them to have emotions, oh, I don't know, teaching them to explain themselves. You know, this is just beyond insane, and it is happening faster, especially as they have these super meta intelligent AIs competing against each other to get better and to learn and to be able to create AIs from themselves. Remember, we read that one too. That was something that Google was doing, having AI create new AI. We should be paying attention. Even if it takes twice as long, it is going to happen in yours and my lifetime. This is a thing for our generation, he said at a TED Talk. AI is pretty powerful. And so what sort of future might we have if we have to contend against powerful computers? It could be awesome, he says, but it could also be apocalyptically bad. Sure it could, especially when they've told AI that they have one goal, and that is to keep us safe. And then AI decides that the only way to keep us safe is to save us from ourselves by wiping out all humans. I mean, it could happen, people. It really could happen. With that said, if we average expert predictions, we will reach human-level AI by 2040. And we will achieve super intelligent AI by 2060. And even if it takes twice as long, it is going to happen in our lifetime. It could be awesome. It could be apocalyptically bad. We're at this great point in time where human-level AI is maybe 25 years away. So we have to make time to make sure that we guide its pathway forward, ensuring a great outcome instead of a bad one. You think? Well, sure, but it's a military-industrial complex that is fueling a lot of this innovation, all in the name of keeping us safe. You know, we found out that even NATO wants to use AI to help keep borders safe and to help keep invaders off of shorelines. To remote control things such as satellites in the sky. You know, when you have these energy weapons, and we've read a lot about that, that's where a lot of our other chunk of taxpayer dollars are going, are into things such as energy weapons that can disintegrate in an instant. And don't think that other countries aren't also working on this type of weaponry. So let's get energy weapons and autonomy all together into the mix. And you can see how, I don't know. I don't even know what to say, guys. Like, as I've been watching that TV show Fringe, it's really been kind of putting a realistic simulation onto a lot of these things that I've been talking about. It's very haunting to me. It's making me start realize that things that I have said before, like every day that we wake up, I'm actually surprised that we wake up to the world that we remembered when we went to sleep. And, you know, the day that it isn't like that anymore, just don't be surprised when it happens. Bill Gates has come out a few times and he's been making some warnings and predictions. And it could happen a number of ways. But AI is one of many disruptive technologies that are coming full frontal and are being tinkered with in all these secret labs. We don't even know. There probably isn't even very much oversight into what they are doing. And it is just an orgy of invention. Everyone hoping to have their name on a scientific publication at some point. So Peter Diamandis of Futurism.com, also the founder and chairman of the XPRIZE Foundation, thinks that the human species is headed for an evolutionary transformation. Yeah, that's apparently what all these rich tech billionaires keep telling us with this technology that they keep funding and pushing into the mainstream. Peter Diamandis thinks that, yes, we are evolving toward a meta-intelligence. It is time to merge with the machine. In an essay for Singularity Hub, which is also one of Kurzweil's hangouts, Diamandis outlines a transformation stage in the multi-billion-year pageant of evolution and takes note of what the recent increasing temperature of evolution, which is a consequence of human activity, may mean for the future. In a nutshell, we are evolving, and it is our own evolution that is changing it. All right, guys, make sure you have a...
JJ against it.